My name is John Erling, and today's date is June 29, 2023. So, Yancey, would you state your full name, please?
Yancey Garfield Redcorn, and Redcorn is two words.
All right, but let's go back to Yancey, unusual name. Where does that come from?
Actually, that's a lot of people would think that that's a, they always ask me, isn't that a Native American name? And I'm like, no, it's a character out of a book called The Cimarron by Edna Ferber. And they made two movies, one in the late 30s and then one in the 50s with Glenn Ford playing Yancey Cravat, C-R-A-V-A-T. He was kind of one of the main characters in the book, and my dad liked the name. And he was a publisher for a newspaper called the Osage News back, I think that's what it was called. And they were up in the Osage Reservation. Had a lot of wanderlust, but he liked living there and he liked being around the Indians, and he was kind of a person that protected and wrote stories about the in favor of the tribes back then. So that was the character Yancey out of the book The Cimarron.
Okay, all right.
That was made into two movies, and he just really liked the name, so yeah. He convinced my mom that they should name me Yancey.
Well, then I'm going to pursue Garfield. Why Garfield?
Garfield is my great, great grandmother's middle name from the gray side. I'm half Redcorn and half gray. My grandmother was gray in their Osage, full blood Osage, and then my grandfather was a Redcorn. So he named me Garfield after my great-great-grandmother, whose name was Jenny Garfield Gray.
I'm in my studio here in Tulsa, and we're talking to you by phone, obviously. Where are you today?
I am in Norman, Oklahoma.
Your birth date?
Is 12/5/1963.
And your present age would be?
59 years old.
Okay, and where were you born?
Pawnee, Oklahoma, just right outside the Osage Reservation. I like to say I was born in the Osage Reservation, but they had a Indian hospital there, the Pawnee Indian Hospital, and I was born there.
Okay, let's talk a bit about your family genealogy, because it also ties you to what's become known as the Reign of Terror and the book and film Killers of the Flower Moon. I think we go
right
back to your great-grandfather, is it?
Yes, my great-grandfather was Raymond Redcorn Sr. He was born in 1881, and his dad was Wyoglenke, which meant no sense, no regard for his safety. He was a great warrior. He was probably born in the 1850s, and it's spelled differently, Wyoglenke. So, I mean, even if I spelt it the way it sounds, it won't come off if people read it. But if they hear it, it's Wyoglenke, which means no disregard, no sense for yourself, for your safety.
Okay.
He was named after finding a neighboring tribe and finding multiple ones. And when he came back, they gave him a new name. And it was like he went in there and took on a bunch of warriors and came out and won.
Mm-hmm.
So they called him Wyoglenke.
Okay.
He had two sons. One was Raymond Redcorn Sr., born in 1881, and the other one, he's called Waken Iron, but his other name was George Redcorn. And he was born in 1885. He was the younger brother, but my great-grandfather was Raymond Redcorn Sr.
He's tied to this story, too, and you may talk about, wasn't he poisoned?
Yes, he was poisoned during this Reign of Terror, and my dad and his siblings, he had an older brother, two younger brothers and a younger sister, they never got to meet their grandfather because they were all born in the 30s and 40s. My dad was born in 1936. But his three sons, Raymond Redcorn II and Harold Redcorn, who is my grandfather, and Dudley Redcorn, Douglas Redcorn, they tried to get them to investigate. But just like the movie Killers of the Flower Moon, it was a conspiracy, and nobody was going to do anything. They just said it was, you know, an accident. And so they couldn't get anybody to investigate it.
So to this day, no details of that poisoning of your great-grandfather?
No, just that before he didn't trust all of his help, and he told his sons to not really come out there. And it was kind of like he didn't really, in my opinion, I don't think he was resigned. He just, it was what I would call the invisible enemy. He didn't know who he could trust. And he knew that people were poisoning other people in his tribe. And so he was like, man, you can't trust anything around here. And it wasn't like he was paranoid. It was that stuff was really happening. And so he was in good health, and it was just one of those things. I mean, not one of those things. It was just one of those. He was one of the victims of the Reign of Terror.
But and did he have a full head right?
Oh, yeah. I think he had a couple. He had a lot of land, too. A lot of land that was stolen. Him and his brother, Waking Iron, or George Redcorn, their guardian stole a bunch of land from them and sold it. And they had a lot of money. They just were taken advantage of by their guardian. My Waking Iron, he bought what was called the Duncan Hotel, and it's written in my dad's book, but they don't. My dad doesn't mention any names. It's all fictitious names, and he calls it the Grand Hotel, but it was the Duncan Hotel in Pawhuska. In the book, it's the Grand Hotel, but in the real life, it was the Duncan Hotel, which it was a really nice swank hotel. They used his money to buy it, to put up the loan, and then what they did, then they bankrupted it and sold it to one of the guardian's friends. I think that's how it happened, and that happened a lot. So it was his. It was basically his hotel, but they used the move that a lot of the guardians did back in the day.
So about when? What was the year of the poisoning of your great grandfather?
This is the interesting part. It was 1931, and a lot of people, after they read Killers of the Flower Moon, or they think, well, the FBI came in, or back then they were the Bureau of Affairs, the federal government. But then after that, it made a name for them. They became the Federal Bureau of Investigation under Hoover. But what was interesting, after they solved this specific crime and convicted William Hell and Ernest Burkhart and all the others, they just packed up and went back to D.C. The tribe had to actually pay them to come out to do the investigation, kind of like pulling teeth. And they finally came out to help out. But then they just picked up, and the killings just kept going on. It wasn't like they quit. My grandparents were very paranoid in the 30s, and they were helicopter parents over my dad and them. They needed to know exactly where they were and what they were doing and where they were going. So there's a lot of generational or intergenerational trauma that comes from that. Yeah, my grandparents, they lived through it too in the 20s. So they experienced all of that. So, they didn't know who to trust. Mm-hmm. And again, it goes back to me saying it was the invisible enemy. It was all around them. And they didn't know who it was.
Right, because the invisible enemy included law enforcement officers, elected officials. That was part of that.
Yeah, the local pastors, the local mortician, the morgue, like you said, the police officers, the government officials, the mayors, just every all the businessmen and all the, I'm going to say all the attorneys, but the majority of the attorneys all became guardians, because in that small town, I don't know, there was 100 and something attorneys in that small town. And they, became guardians and took care of it, and then they all became wealthy.
Yeah,
they became holders of the land.
We should point out it was the federal government who felt the Native Americans, the Osage, didn't know how to handle their money. So the federal government says guardians must be appointed for each one of these people. Is that true?
That's correct.
Right.
We were incompetent. That's what they. State we are legally, we were incompetent. And actually, if you want your money to stay in trust now, like your oil and gas royalties as an Osage, and you want it to not be taxed, then you still just say you're incompetent. So I'm incompetent. They've changed laws since then to where it's been a lot better as far as the Osage is being in control of their own head right in oil and gas royalties. And
yeah. The book your father wrote was A Pipe for February, and it was from the Osage perspective.
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah. He wrote that. It was published in 2002.
And Martin Scorsese actually mentioned it at the Cannes Film Festival.
Yes, he did. And we just republished the book, just came out this month. And it's obviously, but a new foreword in there by Martin Scorsese, and then David Grand, who wrote Killers of the Flower Moon, wrote a blurb on it. So his approval of what he thought it was a great book. And it helped Scorsese understand a little more of what the Osages were thinking, and gave it a little color of Killers of the Flower Moon, which Killers of the Flower Moon in its own right is a great book.
Yep.
David Grand is just a great writer.
Yep.
And he just did some incredible research. And my dad said we kind of knew, pinpointed it with his research.